Dharma Snack. All right, time once again for Truth About Markets, the longest running financial program in the history of the universe, with Max and Stacey on 104.4 FM here in London.
Yeah, and you know what? That theme tune is the theme tune that has followed us around everywhere. Karma Bank.
Yeah. That's right. It's one of the beauties of having a show on Resonance 104.4 is that people can enter into a fugue state of extra existential kind of worm tunneling into a parallel dimension. And something that was good 10 years ago is still good today.
I get it. Hey, speaking of coming back from the past to be just as relevant today, you know, we've been gone from the airwaves of Resonance 104.4 FM and therefore Central London for the past 3 weeks as everybody has been on vacation, holidays, and all that kind of stuff. And I want to mention that... you know, the Resonance 104.4 FM audience might like to know that for Christmas Day, we did a Kaiser Report television special with John Cooper Clarke, who came onto the Kaiser Report in a very epic and special episode. And he read the fantastic Who Stole Bongo's Trousers?
Wasn't that a treat? Yep. John Cooper Clarke was on the show and... everybody loved it, and hope to have him on again later in the year. His star is rising again, you know, as the global economy crashes. And the first you had Pussy Riot, of course, big punk band, reestablishing punk as important musical, you know, and now John Cooper Clarke.
Well, speaking of punk, you know, I'm getting a few comments on today's episode of Kaiser Report because I'm wearing a shirt that you bought me over the Christmas break. And it is like a green furry cross on this black shirt with some purple-haired mermaid sort of lady on the front.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, the Chiron, you know, that thing in the bottom of the screen kind of blocks it out a bit, you know, a little bit. But people are clamoring for that little purple-haired fairy goddess on your shirt, that's for sure.
So, yeah, it's been quite a busy time the last 2 or 3 weeks while everybody's away. A lot of big financial stories and banking stories and global implications with global implications have been happening. And a lot of stuff got dumped in there, like, oh, the fact that, say, the U.S. is sending troops to 35 African nations, which is a pretty big story. We're going to cover that on the next Monday's episode of the Kaiser Report. But there's also been the launch of the Kaiser Ethical Silver.
Yeah, that's right. The U.S. is sending troops to 35 or so African countries. They want to see how the Chinese, up close and personal, how Chinese people are taking over Africa. So they want to get people in there, observers. And the Kaiser Ethical Silver is going to be available through the Guernsey Mint in less than 2 weeks. So people here in Europe can get their hands on a Kaiser Ethical Silver 1 ounce, 0.999 pure ethical silver. And what's great about this Kaiser Ethical Silver round is that it will turbocharge the move of silver up to $500 an ounce, because it does two very important things when it comes to economics. It on the supply and the demand side of how things work. So on the demand side, because it's ethical silver, it's the only ethical silver product in the world. So corporations who are sitting with historic amounts of cash, trillions of dollars worth of cash just sitting there in their balance sheet, like Apple Computer, for example, has $150 billion in cash. And, of course, cash only returns maybe one half of 1%. And also, because of all the money printing going around the world, you could have a lot of problems with inflation. So these corporations are going to start moving into precious metals. And, of course, a lot of them are bound by the UN's corporate social responsibility mandate that they have to deploy assets in a socially responsible way by law. So this is the only place that they can do it. So there's going to be a huge new demand coming into the market from corporations as the silver and gold story gets bigger and bigger. Now, on the supply side, the supply is being diminished because part of the supply issues with silver is that there's a lot of what they call, junk silver or silver that's not accounted by people with jewelry and cutlery and things like that. And so the Kaiser Ethical Silver sources from recycled silver sources. So you're taking a lot of that supply off the market that's, it has the effect of dampening prices when they move higher because people suddenly dump all their silverware and cash out, and that causes a supply overhang. So here we're taking that off the market right now. So we're both increasing demand and reducing supply with these Kaiser Ethical Silver. Plus, we're riding the, silver's been up on average 20% for 12 years. I think, it's beating Warren Buffett by a huge factor. It's beating just about every single asset class in the world. I think it is the number one asset class for 12 years. At last I checked, it was the number one asset class over 10 years, up 800%. Gold is similarly doing very well, and I think over the next 5 to 10 years, silver will do even better. I think it'll average gains approaching 25 to 30% a year. The pound, the UK pound, is looking bad, and everything is glorious.
Well, yeah, we're not saying it's going to profit that we're just predicting that the currencies, the fiat currencies, are going to fall by that much. They're in a race openly. This is the intention, Mervyn King says. This is the intention, Ben Bernanke says. We see in Japan over Christmas, they've re-elected a former prime minister to be the prime minister again on a promise, on a platform of extremely aggressive monetary policy, as if the last 20-something years weren't aggressive. So they're aggressively devaluing. Now, because of the allegedly floating exchange rate between the yen and the dollar and the pound and the euro, etc., it looks like, some are rising and against the other, but really they're all plummeting to earth. This is our bet. You may have a different one, but we believe that they're all going to crash to nothing and they'll get their wish. And the only thing standing will be the same thing that has been a currency for the past 5,000 years, gold and silver.
You had Captain Paul Watson on the show, mm-hmm. and he talks about the economics of extinction.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now in the case of bluefin tuna, which is being fished to extinction, the prices are, as Paul Watson mentioned, they're $35,000, $50,000, $60,000 for a bluefin tuna. I saw somebody wrote an email saying that they saw somebody buying a bluefish tuna for over several hundred thousand dollars.
$736,000.
Right. So they, as Paul Watson says, it becomes a priceless commodity. Because if you, if you fish bluefin tuna to extinction and you have one of the last few dozen of these species left in your freezer, and you've got people out there who want to buy these things, you're going to pay a lot of it out there. Now, in the case of silver, there's only 1 billion ounces above ground. You, me, and everyone listening to this audience have the ability to, quote-unquote, fish silver out of existence. We have the ability to take silver off the market to the point where it's no longer available, which will drive the price to $500 an ounce, which is the campaign. It's up to you. It's up to me. There's only 1 billion ounces left. There's 33 billion above ground, plus this junk silver or recycled silver that is unaccounted for, which nobody knows how much is out there, but it's not, that much. So use this economics of extinction to your favor. To the extent that silver goes to $500 an ounce means banks go out of business. The big four banks in the UK that are involved in fraud and all these other crimes, they go out of business. And the currency that is being used, precious metals, goes up exponentially. And, you happen to have a lot of it, so you're doing well.
Now, you've mentioned the junk silver and recycled silver quite a few times, and now our partner on this Kaiser ethical silver coin is a guy named Brian, and he says that actually most of the recycled silver comes from X-rays. So this is where their source gets it, and apparently there are just millions and millions and millions of X-rays around the world in storage at hospitals and facilities like that, where, you know, as the people die and technology has moved on, they have all this extra X-rays that they need to get rid of. And they used to be made with silver. These images, obviously, you know, photography was made with silver. Now they make digital imaging. Mm-hmm. So they X-rays no longer are made with silver. But that's where they get a lot of, that's where they source a lot of the silver for the Kaiser ethical silver.
Mm-hmm. That's right. A lot of silver comes into the market through recycling, through X-rays, and this kind of supply of silver. That's obviously, it costs money to recycle silver. It's not costless. As the price goes higher, it becomes, you have an incentive to recycle it and go after these other sources. But, you know, unlike gold, every single ounce of gold, you know, that more or less that's been mined since the beginning of time is still available and above ground. There's about 160,000 tons of it. But silver, because it's used in things like X-rays and it's used industrially, a lot of it's gone. It's not to be found again. It's been thrown away. So that therefore, there's only a billion above ground. I saw something interesting about platinum, Stacey, that there is only 16 tons of platinum that have been mined that are available above ground. That this is a shockingly small amount of platinum. It's basically the size of a house in the cubic square footage of a house of platinum. That's all the platinum that's ever been mined ever since the beginning of time. That's all there is available in platinum.
Wow. And they want to, that's another thing that has now once again reared its ugly head. The idea of a $1 trillion platinum coin. And you know, we discussed this in Kai's report like 2 years ago when it was first, the idea was first floated. And the theory is, so, you know, the U.S. goes more and more bonkers politically every quarter. You know, there's a new level of crazy. It's like everybody is on these bath salts. You know, it used to just be kind of jacked up on coke sort of crazy. Now it's jacked up on bath salts crazy across the whole economy and political spectrum. But so they always have this deficit ceiling battle, and it's all you know, it's like worldwide WWF wrestling for the population. And what it is I say Congress is the one that determines what they're going to budget for the year, right? And then at the end of the year, they fight over what they've budgeted, because this is what the debt ceiling is about. So it's always a big showmanship up until the very last second, and markets don't seem to notice so much anymore. But anyway, the idea is that, you know, the Constitution of the United States gives only Congress the authority to issue the currency, gold and silver, right? A certain ratio, and they could regulate the value. However, there is a weird exception in that the Treasury can mint platinum coins and regulate the value thereof. So they're saying, instead of having this fight over the debt ceiling, just issue one platinum coin, and put a face value of $1 trillion, because you're allowed to regulate the value. You could say it's $35, $100, 3,000, a trillion, a gazillion. So just say it's $1 trillion and deposit it at the Fed, and therefore you are not violating, you know, you haven't passed the debt ceiling.
Right. Well, a couple of points pop out first. First of all, of course, $1 trillion would buy about 10 months of time before you hit the debt ceiling again, because its debt ceiling is over $16 trillion. But the other interesting point is that $1 trillion in platinum implies 18,000 tons of platinum. As I just said, the total number of platinum around the world available in the entire world is 16 tons. So you need more than 1,000 times all the platinum in the entire globe to make a $1 trillion platinum coin. So, okay, simple mathematics tells you that you're 1,000 times removed from the possibility of even being able to put together this magical platinum coin. Of course, the other point I think needs to be made is that the same people that are arguing, yeah, we love a platinum coin to solve our deficit, they're the same people who hate gold. Gold-backed currency is a barbarous relic, that you're going backwards. We'll never go back to gold, but we're going to solve our debt problem by minting a trillion-dollar platinum coin. I think this shows you how far apart people are when it comes to understanding how bad this fiat fractional reserve, multi-hundred-trillion-dollar derivative global mess that is being held together with monthly, every single month now, they come with either the debt ceiling or the fiscal cliff, or like, we have to expand the debt. We have to expand the debt. This is happening month by month by month. This is getting bad.
Well, but the fact is, the reason why I think they love it, like the likes of Joe Wiesenthal at Business Insider, is the reason why he likes his platinum coin idea is because it forces it to them. They think they basically turn bullion, precious metals, into fiat, because it's not about getting a real market-based price $1 trillion worth of platinum axes, so they don't need 1,000 tons. What they're saying is, we're just going to take one little tiny coin the size of, you put your thumb and your pointer finger together, make it a circle, and you'll see that's the size of the coin, they're saying, and they're just going to write $1 trillion on it. This is worth $1 trillion because we say it's worth $1 trillion. So therefore, we've made it into our own fake fiat. We can turn it into whatever we want by the authority vested in the Treasury by the Constitution, and that's it. It's like monopoly money, in the sense that Joe Wiesenthal, the paper bug, would like.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Constitution talks about gold, silver, and platinum as the foundation for a viable economy. Benjamin Franklin famously said one of the biggest reasons for the Declaration of Independence and the Revolutionary War from England was to get away from the Bank of England. And, of course, the Bank of England created this idea of lending money to the government at interest and then making a market in the government's own money creation. And it's a bit of a debt slavery model that the American colonies were anxious to get away from. So they put in the Constitution gold, silver, platinum, and referenced it as money. The only way money would be considered money is through these precious metals. And over the 240 years, they've gone to an economy with $100 trillion in debt, if you include the unfunded liabilities of Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, plus the national debt and the budget deficit and the corporate debt. And the last vestige they have to the Constitution, the last thread hanging this thing together, is some blogger in New York who wants to create a trillion-dollar precious metal platinum coin that will somehow hold us all together. Now, if you are thinking about buying gold, silver, or platinum, this should be a huge signal to you that if the time to buy gold and silver is running out. Since we've talked about it on this show for 9 years, we've only talked about one thing to buy, only one investment to buy, and that's been gold and silver. Gold's been averaging a 17% annual rate of return. Silver's been averaging a 20% rate of return. It's the best performing assets in the world, bar none. Nothing comes close. And now we're saying that this has just been the warm-up act. This has just been the little bit of beginning to a massive bull market, where you see gains that are going to be double what we've seen, because and you just read the news. I mean, here you have some monkey on some overhyped website that pushed things like Groupon and Facebook and Zynga, where people locked in 50, 60, 70, 80, and 90% losses in 2 or 3 months' time. This is the same site that's now saying, oh, here's the solution. Let's pretend that a pound of provolone cheese is worth $1 trillion and make that a collateral against our 16 plus trillion debt ceiling, people. Oh my God.
And that's, I mean, we're in a sort of unheard of time, really. And I was reading somebody was, you know, responding to a claim that, gold and silver didn't do well as, you know, over 50 years at a certain time during the Great Depression compared to the Dow. And then the precious metals analyst did point out, well, except for the fact that several of those Dow companies went bankrupt, i.e. to zero, had you actually held them, you know,
yeah,
you
would. Yeah, the Dow Jones, the 30 industrial companies in the Dow Jones are constantly changing. They're not the same Dow Jones from 30, 40, 50 years ago. It changes every 2 or 3 years. They swap companies in and out of the Dow. It's a ridiculous comparison to make. Furthermore, the time period we're talking about is starting in the year 2000, is when Gordon Brown sold 60% of the UK gold, 400 tons, and it was the bottom of the gold and silver market. That's when we started saying buying gold and silver. We're not saying going back to anything beyond 2000. Up until 2000, you had a bull market that started in 1982, is when the bear market in gold and silver started, when the bull market in the Dow Jones started in 1982. That was the inflection point. These two reversed. For 25 years, the Dow, up until 2000, the stock market was in a bull market. Since 2000, we've had the reverse. Priced in gold and silver, the Dow Jones has crashed. Everything, every other asset has deflated or crashed against gold and silver since 2000, like we've been saying. So it makes no sense to use a different reference, a point of reference or time reference. That's not what we're saying. If you're counting on using the actual words that we've said, that's what we actually said. If you want to pretend that we said something else and make a point based on your pretending what we said, then that's something else too.
So along with this peak credit, peak fiat, and peak everything, really, we're at a sort of inflection point of ending of this sort of structure and system we have, comes the, you know, the commodities and the actual predictions made decades ago that there would be increased drought and floods. This was one of the primary major predictions made by the climate change models decades ago, is that the future would see erratic, in terms of precipitation. That would be one of the most marked, noticeable changes we would see. And sure enough, last year, we've seen record drought in the U.S. And in the U.K., it was the second wettest year on record. Waitrose boss, according to this Telegraph headline, Britons should brace themselves for massive food price hikes. Britain's recent food price rises are just the tip of the iceberg, and consumers should brace themselves for massive hikes in some commodities this year. Mark Price said food price inflation would rise further as the heavy rainfall last year meant that many farmers did not plant crops for 2013. He said, we're seeing input food inflation of around 3 to 3.5%, but we expect it to go up as much as 5%. In some commodities, the price increases will be massive. It's bread, vegetables, all produce. The apple crop was down 20 to 30%, so apple prices have to go up. You have only seen the tip of the iceberg. Now, the beauty of a market, of course, is you can shout all you want about conspiracy theories and you don't want to believe it, but don't believe it. Don't hedge yourself. Don't prepare. That's your choice. You don't need to prepare. You know, we've been looking at this for a decade, and you saw what was coming. You saw, and that was part of our plan to buy gold and silver, is at least it's also considered a commodity as well as a currency, and it would track with this pending food price inflation.
Yeah. Well, in the UK, the media has reported on climate change, climate catastrophe, man-made global warming, man-made global climate change in a more responsible way, I would say, than in the U.S. You know, and this country and this government, you know, they built the Thames barrier because in response, they spent the money. They said, you know what, our scientists believe and our government, you know, our quangos and our research suggests that this is really happening. So we're going to spend the money. We're going to build this huge barrier. And they recently used it. They used it just a couple of weeks ago. It was the first time in many years. The Thames barrier went up. And as was needed, and they're being compared to other, let's say the U.S. They're proactive. Nobody, you know, why is that? Because first of all, you do have some diversity in the media here. You do have some debate in the media. You do have people talking about these things, and there is some healthy debate. And you know, that I don't think it's an accident that you have, let's say, a Lord Monckton, for example, who's a British citizen. He only gets airtime in America because in the UK, he doesn't get any airtime in the UK because not a single person in the UK would give him 5 seconds of time because he sounds like a complete, like a children's clown show. You would never see him. It would just be absurd to have someone like that in the UK at this point because they are 20 years beyond the idiocy of believing that this is somehow a theory cooked up.
Well, actually, he gets attention in the Daily Mail, and the Daily Mail is often the source of linkage in the U.S. media to climate change denial. So the Daily Mail is a crucial media publication. It presents all sorts of crazy ideas, which are allowed to disseminate around the world. So he does have an outlet here for his ideas, but most people, luckily, like you said, the UK spent, I think it was £1 billion on this flood barrier, which is high tech, super, did save the city. We could be dealing with a story right now in London of massive floods or along the Thames that there could have been massive floods. Obviously, there would have been because they needed to raise the flood barrier.
All right. Are they going to build one in New York? No.
But so New York, you know, there have been, if you go back, it's actually on Google, you know, news back to something like 1996. There's an article presented to New York City where a scientist, I think from Yale or Harvard, said that you have to build a flood barrier because this is what's going to happen. And she said exactly that the subways would flood. And the subways had not flooded in the 100 years of existence at that point. And nobody believed her. They kind of believed her, but they didn't feel like nobody wanted to spend the money on the flood barrier. And sure enough, it's happened. $35 billion in damage just for New York. Mm-hmm. You know, had they spent, you know, $5 billion, I think they said it would have been up to $7 billion to build the flood barriers to protect lower Manhattan. But as it is, they decided not to. And here you go. You have a disaster of many times more.
Right. And they're still not convinced. And there's no plans to build anything now. And in New Jersey, which was hit very hard, they turned even the relief money into a political game where it was an attempt to embarrass the Republican governor, Chris Christie, which he was embarrassed. He was forced to beg for the relief money and he was made to look foolish. And that's unfortunate because it avoids the true question here about what about the fact that you have man-made global warming, climate change causing the economics, not just of tuna fish and whales, but of human beings. You know, human beings are being forced into extinction by man-made global warming, climate change. And again, unfortunately, it does mean the price of gold and silver are going to continue going higher.
Well, but this is the thing. Okay, so you had plenty of warning of floods and droughts coming. Go back 10, 20, 30 years, and this is what the science said would happen. You could choose to protect yourself. London did. They have, you know, lower costs as a result. Today, they could be facing a bill of 20, 30 billion pounds had the flood waters rose last week and flooded the city. The U.S., New York City, looked at the same data, were given the same warnings, and they decided not to do anything. And it's costing them many, many times more. The same thing with fiat currency. You look at the mathematics of it, the mathematics of debt, the models of debt. We've looked at them. We've presented them to you. You can decide for yourself whether or not you feel like spending your money and your time and your resources now to protect yourself from the collapse that the model suggests will happen, or you decide, you know, you'll deal with it when that happens. Mm-hmm. But at the time, it's going to cost you many, many, many times more in wealth, resources, and time to protect yourself from the disaster that has happened around you.
Yeah. And so one of the big differences is the influence of corporate lobbyists. And 30 years ago in this country, you didn't have a big component of corporate interests, but you do now. So this is why the NHS is being dismantled. This is why the rail system is, the prices are keep going up, even though it makes no sense from a government policy to allow that to happen. So the corporate lobbyists, the American model, unfortunately, is creeping into the UK and destroying the fabric of society in the same way that it's happening in the US. It's happening slower than we see in the US because there was an institution that was a harder nut to crack. That is the House of Commons. But now, unfortunately, we see this is being destroyed. I'd have to point the finger at Tony Blair, really, who did everything he could to bring in the spin doctors and the lobbyists from abroad, from overseas, and basically, you know, sell the UK government to the highest bidder.
Well, you know, again, some people believe in a top-down thing and that the elite have all the power. I believe it's also the population. I was here. I witnessed that he was a very charming man. He was a convincing speaker. People loved him, and they let him do that because he was a charming speaker. He was a mesmerizing speaker because he was like in a trance of evangelical passion for his ideas. And he was formerly a lawyer. He can speak well and he can argue well, even though he was lying. He lied convincingly, just like Bill Clinton did. Bill Clinton destroyed the fabric of the financial system. The reason why we have the crisis today is because of Bill Clinton. But again, he's a snake charmer. He charmed the population. People loved him. People still love him. No matter, even with this financial catastrophe, you hear over and over in America that Bill Clinton, if we only had Bill Clinton back, everything would be okay. Mm-hmm. But he's the one that set you up for destruction because of his smooth talking way. And people couldn't see past it. They couldn't just look at the data, look at the facts, look at the projections of what would happen with the Commodities Futures Modernization Act. What would happen if you got rid of Glass-Steagall? Nobody wanted to. All they were concerned about was how charming he was and his smile and his wit and his charm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mentioned Tony Blair, really, you know, to compare Tony Blair with, let's say, Margaret Thatcher. You know, Thatcher was, you get what you get is on the tin, and she didn't try to pretend to be something other than she was. She said quite openly that, you know, there is no such thing as society. You know, her views were not equivocated, were they? But then Blair came in as labor. You know, okay, now all of the excesses of the Thatcher era should have been, you know, the direction should have been changed to mitigate the damage of that era. But instead, under this, quote, new labor, Blair, they were accentuated. You know, as Thatcher said, her greatest contribution to the Tory party was Tony Blair. That's what she said.
Yeah, but I was here when Tony Blair was elected. He was promising a continuation of her policies that the labor needs. That's why he called it new labor at the conference down in Brighton. He got rid of, he added new labor to it and got rid of their, there used to be, I forget what it was, like a 5-point thing, a pledge that labor had to do, that they would support unions and labor. He got rid of that before being made leader. Like, it was public and open. And that they would continue the Thatcher thing. We had to adopt the markets. We had to go with this policy of privatization. He said this, and it was always a pitch to you know, many Brits, it's a uniquely, you know, powerful disease here is this property speculation. It's a unique to here. I've never really seen so many, you know, people high on property speculation. And he really, you know, that has always been the way that Thatcher got away with what she did and what Blair did. He appealed. That's why they got so many votes, was the property speculating population, that we didn't need to actually work and make an income. Our incomes didn't matter so much. If you only made £20,000 a year, your property price was going, you were making £60,000 a year on your property. That was what they sold. And one more thing, over Christmas, I don't know if you saw this, but some documents were released from the records from Thatcher's time. And a lot of newspapers and tabloids at the time were saying that she planned to get rid of the NHS completely and privatize it 100%. And she denied it. She, in one of her campaigns, she openly said the Tories will keep the NHS like it is. But the documents reveal that, in fact, their plans were to get rid of it entirely, nothing, none of it, and hand it over to corporations.
Right. So the point is that type of privatization thinking would have meant that no flood barrier on the Thames would have been built, because mm-hmm. the corporate lobbyists would have lobbied the government to not have it built, because it's not in their interest. Mm-hmm. So it would not have been done. So, but since that time, there's been the drift toward the economics of extinction, and that governments around the world and their corporate handlers are pushing the drugs and the pharmaceuticals and everything else that comes with it, that's leading to societal disintegration for a buck. And this interview with Paul Watson, he's down there in the Southern Ocean. We interviewed him on Kaiser Report. It's up on the web today, Saturday. And he's on the front line, you know, fighting the Japanese whalers in a whale war. And he, as we say, he broke away from Greenpeace 30 years ago. He thought their approach was too bureaucratic. He wanted to get on the front line. And they have done, you know, fantastic work doing all of this. And it's a good episode today. You should check it out.
Yeah, I love the fact that technology has just advanced so much in the past 10 years or 9 years since we've been making this show, that we did a video interview with a man on a ship in the Southern Ocean in Antarctica. And it, you know, the quality isn't the best, but it's pretty frigging good. It's better than it used to be to a landline. Remember when people had dial-up? It's better than that. And that's pretty amazing. But I wanted to also turn to what the Telegraph, Ambrose Evans Pritchard, wrote about this week, speaking of this whole, you know, as I was talking about before, is like all currencies, all fiat currencies are plummeting to earth. And it's the fact that some rise temporarily against the other gives this perception that there is some currencies actually rising in absolute value. Switzerland and Britain are now at currency war. Did you see this, Max?
Yeah, I posted it on the website.
Okay. It seems you can't debase your coinage these days, even if you try. The Bank of England is straining every sinew to drive down sterling with quantitative easing. And what happens? The Swiss National Bank trumps Threadneedle Street with an outright blitz of gilt purchases. They just print it and buy. The Swiss and UK central banks are effectively fighting a low-intensity currency war against each other. It has come to this.
Mm-hmm. Right. I read that, of course. He points out what we've been saying for years, that there's a currency war. And the point of the war is to debase your currency against other currencies as a way to stoke exports, principally, to try to get your economy out from underneath the burden of having so much debt. And to debase your currency, you lower interest rates, which has the result of increasing the debt, because it's cheaper to go borrow and engage in stupid ideas on the investment front, which blow up and cause deflation or more debt. So he goes on to say at the conclusion there of his piece, he throws up his hands and says, I just don't know what's going to happen. Now, Ambrose Evans Pritchard's been quoted around the media for a few years as being a guy who seems to know what he's talking about. He's got his, you know, finger on the pulse. But now he's finally thrown in the towel and says, you know, maybe I don't know really what's going on, and maybe this is getting completely out of control. Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. It is getting completely out of control. We're in a currency war, which it's turning into a hot war. If you look at between China and Japan, things are heating up there. You've got Mideast conflicts are growing for the same reason. Gold, silver, and oil are going higher. In this country, you know, I wrote a piece about this on MaxKaiser.com. They have the problem of the zombie economy, zombie bank, zombie currency. So here's how it works out. The currency is being debased, and you can see that in the price of stuff like food and energy and transportation. And people are clamoring, my God, the prices for education, food, and energy are going up 20% a year. We're getting killed. But then the government, well, I should say the corporations that own the government, will say, no, you don't. We don't see any inflation. All we see is deflation. Well, how is that possible? It's because when prices go up for these guys who are printing the money, they just print more money because they're zombies. They just go out and kill somebody else and suck their blood. They're vampires and zombies. So for them, it's invisible. They don't see any price rises because their pockets are bottomless. They have no problem. They're borrowing money at 0%. The money is free for them. They have free money. So they don't see any inflation. The price was up 20%. I'll just dig 20% deeper into the free money pot. And they are zombies. But everyone else who doesn't have access to free money is getting killed.
That's right. And now, this is the thing also. We do have a talk coming up with a guy named Paul Ormerod, who is friends with Steve Keen. And what this economist does is he also looks at complex systems. And this is the thing is, you know, each individual actor in this global currency war is acting on simple inputs and outputs, and they're pressing a button. We want our pound to go down. We want interest rates to go down, and they press a button. But the complex system of all of these currencies during this war is it seems all stable right now. It seems everybody is kind of relaxing and think, you know, remember 3 years ago when they first embarked on this quantitative easing, the media was like, wow, this is unprecedented. We've never done this. And this is a radical policy. And now what used to be radical, people are like, oh, this is okay. This is normal. And hey, let's issue a $1 trillion coin. Everybody's stable and thinks it's okay. And God, we got away with this experiment. Until suddenly, I really believe it's just going to be so sudden overnight. And it could be tomorrow, it could be Monday, it could be Tuesday, it could be a year from now, it could be 5 years from now. But the longer that everything seems normal, the bigger that collapse is going to be, and out of the blue.
Well, the Northern Rock, you had a run on the bank, mm-hmm. and that was related to subprime, and the bubble burst in the space of 2 or 3 days. Lehman mm-hmm. Brothers shortly went bust. And it all happened quite quickly. Now, what we have today is a sovereign bond market bubble. Mm. The UK sovereign bond or gilt is trading at a 300-year high. Never since the creation of the Bank of England in 1694 has the UK bond price been higher, which is to say interest rates have never been lower. And this is a bubble. In America, the bonds are trading at a 240-year high. Notice that it maps the creation of the country itself. Since the creation of the country itself, the bonds have never been higher than they are today, the 10-year bond. This is a bubble. Now, what we've been saying is people need to get proactive and try to work their way through this crisis, but that's not happening. They are doing everything they can to fuel the crisis, which means that you're going to have a bubble pop. And so interest rates, this is the way, I mean, even in the another, I think it was in the Telegraph also this past week, one of the columnists said he is doing something that is hard for him to do, but he's doing it anyway. He's selling all of his bonds He's getting completely out of bonds because
out of his pension fund. It's not just like he's an investor. This is a guy ready to retire and saying that's the exact opposite of what you've always been told.
Yeah, because he says interest rates can't go any lower and they're only going to go higher, which means bond prices go down, which means you have huge losses. So here's how it's going to, and all these people in the UK, by the way, are on these tracker rates. Mm. They're floating rates, they're tracker rates. And so they're completely exposed to rising interest rates. So what happens is that you have a global bond and currency war going on that no one's being told about, where countries are debasing their currency and keeping interest rates near zero and buying their own debt. You know, the biggest buyer of UK gilts is the UK. The Bank of England issues bonds and then it buys the bonds. Same thing with Japan, same thing with America. And of course, you have this, a lot of tension between countries like China, which has bought up to $3 trillion worth of other people's junk currencies, and they are getting antsy, and now they're engaged in a hot war with Japan. And of course, the U.S. would side with Japan. So China, to retaliate, could very simply decide to dump U.S. treasuries as an act of war. Okay, does that make sense for them? Well, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But in a war, people do crazy things, the fog of war. So let's say China says, you know, we're going to dump $1 trillion worth of U.S. treasury bonds. Okay, interest rates around the world would go from roughly 1.5% or 1.5% on average to 7%. Your tracker rate cost, okay, your monthly mortgage would increase by 400% in 1 month. Now, is that and there are millions of people in this country who are on these tracker rates, so they would immediately be homeless. So you'd have 5 million people homeless in a month.
Yeah, and for a population that is hooked on property speculation as a way of life, as a source of income, remember that if the whole game is to flip it to a greater fool, you know, when interest rates can only go up, that's a bad point to be flipping, trying to get in and out of houses. Because if interest rates are 14% and they could pretty much only go down, then you've got a lot of flipping ahead of you as rates go down.
Right. Well,
but now they can only go up.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Talking about, you know, the Thames barrier is a good kind of metaphor for this whole thing, because here you have a piece of technology that guards City of London, London proper, from floods. Now, does anything exist to stop the flood of fiat money from swamping the UK economy once the bond bubble bursts? No. Does any economy in the world have anything like that in place? No, because all of the economies of the world are all joined at the hip through the central bank system, through the Bank of International Settlements, which is the central bank of central banks. And so we have in the Forex market, for example, $5 trillion worth of transactions every single day of everyone else's government bonds, of everyone buying each other's government bonds. So you have the story is you've got a sea of fiat nonsense, and you've got the problem of a rising tide of fiat worthless claims because of the bond bubble cracking, which is similar to, you know, the icebergs melting. You know, the icebergs are melting. Their sea levels are rising, and it's causing problems like we see in New York. Now you have the bond market collapsing, which would be like sea icebergs melting. The whole country of Greenland goes liquid, and oceans rise by 2 or 3 inches. That would put 500 million people as climate migrants without a home. They'd be underwater. Same thing, bonds crash, fiat money worthlessness rises exponentially, and now you've got 5 million homeless people in the UK in 1 month. That is, the probability of that is not, is over 50% in 2013.
Well, and you know, we talk about the currency war, and if you compare it to hot wars, because it is a different sort of war. It's not like, you know, using guns and traditional guns and tanks and stuff like that. But if you try to compare it to World War II, you know, you had the crazy kamikazes of Japan, and it scared people because it looked so crazy. I mean, here were guys willing to dive bomb their plane into your ship. Now, the Germans also looked bonkers. They were willing to genocide an entire population and, you know, smoke them up chimneys. But then there were the, you know, the more allies did traditional war, and it was a, you know, there were, you know, so there were different players on the field. Now, if you look at the currency war, it seems we only have crazy kamikazes. Like, if you look at the UK, if you look at the US, if you look at the EU, if you look at Japan, they're all flying their planes into their, you know, their monetary planes into the market. They're just, it's absolute craziness.
Yeah. It's like world war. I'd say I go back to World War One, where these countries are positioning themselves in Europe, and then something that people look back and say, oh, the Archduke was assassinated. That started World War One. That's more of a random occurrence where there was already, the tensions were already high. It just took one little thing to have it spill out into the opening. So here you have a war going on right now, but it's not really known. People don't understand it. They don't see it. The Telegraph, when that story with about the Swiss franc and the pound, suddenly it's like Kaiser, MaxKaiser.com, we call it Financial War Reports. It's as if a war report from the front line finally made it back to the home base. They finally figured something out. There's something going on here. There's a currency war going on. Wow, that sounds interesting. What's that all about? Of course, Jim Rickards wrote a book called Currency War. It came out a year ago or so. He's working on it for several years. We've talked to him many times. This is not sudden. It's breaking in the mainstream press here in the UK, but The only way to stop the UK from being blown up by this is to start raising interest rates immediately, and to take the hit immediately, but to somehow defend your currency by higher interest rates. That's never going to happen. This government will never, ever. As a matter of fact, they're bringing in Mark Carney from Bank of Canada to start running the Bank of England. He's talking about targeting nominal GDP, which means he wants lower interest rates. He wants more fiat money creation. He wants government buying more toxic assets. So they're going the absolute wrong direction.
And we have 1 minute left. And I just want to say, you know, we'll be talking about this more on Kaiser Report this week, because Satyajit Das is going to be talking to us. He's the author of Extreme Money. He knows derivatives and knows the financial system inside out. He's a fantastic, everybody always loves this guest. But one of the things he said he wants to talk about is the curious fact that the ordinary person doesn't seem to be understanding the situation they are currently in. And he wants to talk about that.
I just think it's the good analogy. It's just, you know, the war drums are beating, and their wars, open hostilities are to be declared shortly. And then it'll be the cat's out of the bag. Interest rates will immediately jump. Immediately, day one, interest rates up 100 basis points to 200 basis points. Gold will immediately jump from 1,700 to 2,200. Then people will ask themselves, oh my God, I miss gold. I miss gold. And they'll be saying that all the way up to $10,000 an ounce. I missed it. I missed it. I missed it. They'll be saying, I missed silver as it climbs to $500 an ounce. Every time it breaks 100, a new 100, new century. Oh, I missed it. Oh, I missed it. All the way up to 500. But that's the way markets work.
And that's because they're thinking of fiat. It's not even that. It's the end of your fiat. They keep on thinking of how much profit they're going to make in pounds or dollars. And it's stupid.
Well, pretty soon you're going to start talking about gold and silver in terms of price per gram. And then you'll know we're at a new phase of the bull market.
Well, that's it for this episode of Truth About Markets on Resonance 104.4 FM in London. It's nice to be back, and happy 2013.
Okay, bye, y'all.